Greetings, Earth explorers, and welcome to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Here, the result is always positive. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, we discuss the mysteries of the universe. When we are done, you will never look at the stars or yourself or maybe even your scriptures the same again. Whether you are in a truck headed for the coast or in a car driving across the frosty desert tonight, or working in your garage on your favorite project, as you listen, you're about to learn more about where you came from, why you are here, and where you are going than you thought possible. In here, your potential is absolutely unlimited. Tonight, in our cosmology section, we're going to discuss the creation of the Earth, Big Bang Theory, maybe some holes in the theory, and maybe some light shed on the theory. And in our UFO section tonight, we're going to talk about crop circles, how they're made, why maybe they're primarily in England, and other important things. I also would very much like to report on our trip to Salt Lake City this last week. The people there were absolutely wonderful. The book table, our book signing at the book table in Logan, Utah, was wonderfully successful. I don't know how many people were in there, but it was over 100. We sold all the books they had, and we signed even more. I also want to thank the people at the Cache Valley Channel, especially Emily and Beth, who were our interviewers on the TV station we were on. It was a great interview, and it was good exposure. It was a very pleasant experience. And if you ever have a chance to get out to Logan, Utah, make sure you stop in and say hello to the people at the Cache Valley Channel. And our lecture Sunday night was absolutely the best success. I couldn't count exactly how many people were there, but the place seats 300, and I didn't see any empty seats. There may have even been people standing. We had a very good discussion on the creation of the Earth, the interaction of Nephilim with ancient America and ancient civilizations, and we also covered possibly the destiny of the Earth. It was a very successful trip, and I appreciate the hospitality of the people out there, and especially Bob and Carol Rich, who were very instrumental in that entire trip being a success. I would like to mention our book, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1. Thousands of people call it the greatest story on the universe. And it solves the mystery of evolution and creation once and for all. On the cover is the grand sextile astrological formation, six planets in the shape and the alignment of a Star of David around the Earth. And in November of 2003, there was also a full lunar eclipse during this formation. That alignment, that event, has not happened since the heralding of the birth of Solomon. And at that time, there was a prophecy made that in the last days, when this formation occurred again, the knowledge, lost knowledge about the creation of the earth, would be restored. And honestly, our book, The Ark of Millions of Years, could not have been written as any earlier than 15 years ago, because all of the works that you need in order to find this knowledge were not even translated into English until that time. And you can pick up a copy of The Ark of Millions of Years at your local Barnes & Noble or Joseph Beth Booksellers, or now at Davis Kidd Bookstores, or you can pick it up tonight by going to www.arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that A-R-K like Noah's Ark. And remember to put in the code word ARK, A-R-K, and you will get free shipping. And, of course, we're also providing two free audio chapters at the website. You can download them and listen to them on your computer. You can burn a CD and listen to it in your vehicle, or you can even download it to your iPod and listen to it as you're jogging or doing whatever you do when you listen to your iPod. And if you order the hardback during the program tonight, you'll also get the entire book on audio mailed to you for free when we send the book to you. And yeah, that's an excellent way to listen to the book, read the book while you're driving. All right, let's get to it. Our cosmology section tonight, we are going to talk about the creation of the Earth. Now, a lot of people don't know what cosmology is. Sometimes they think it's, it smacks of a lot of different words, but cosmology means the study of the universe. We are going to concentrate on planet Earth today. Now, modern cosmology, if there is such a word, is now undergoing it's kind of foundation-building revolution. We used to think we had a pretty good handle on it, but as instrumentation gets better and mathematicians get better, and, of course, with the Internet spreading the very latest knowledge, very latest abstracts out there, there are brilliant minds digesting and assimilating this knowledge faster than universities ever could before. And so there's kind of a revolution going on in the science of cosmology. Printed word is almost antiquated as soon as it comes out. And in the past, we used to rely on physics review. We would have a review of our peers. We call it a peer review. And occasionally, well, not occasionally, but more often than not, many articles and many abstracts are rejected by the science community as not being unique enough or not having enough research behind them to be granted print in their publications. Not so with the Internet. All ideas, no matter how outrageous, are being blogged out there as fast as they can be typed with a keyboard. And, of course, millions and millions of people are assimilating this knowledge and applying it to their daily lives and to their imaginations, inserting it into their musical compositions, and we are being graced with a quickening, almost, in the science of cosmology. So this revolution that's occurring may require that we transcend previous notions of space, time, reality, religion, and that is sometimes difficult for humans to do. We have our traditions, we have our belief system, and sometimes we're so entrenched in that belief system that we can't get out of it. It's almost blasphemous, or it's violating the trust of our family if we entertain new ideas about the creation of the Earth. And if you ask modern people who are fascinated by cosmology, you'll find that most of them are untrained in it. It does happen to be quite mathematics intensive, unless you just stick with the more esoteric ideas. And so they kind of close their eyes and have their own ideas of what the universe is like. Now, anciently, back about the time the Bible was being written, or at least the Old Testament of the Bible, there were two viewpoints of the universe that were predominant. One is that the Earth was round, and the universe out there was a somewhat curved ceiling over the top of us, over which the stars were scattered in various arrangements. And the other, of course, is that the Earth was flat. And about the 5th century B.C., the Greek philosophers, believed that the Earth was not flat, but domed, we were a round celestial object. In fact, Aristotle honed the picture so that the lunar sphere, a sphere the size of the orbit of the moon, was defined as the border between the earthly world of change and decay inside and the perfect unchanging heavens outside. And there was a modification about the 2nd century A.D. Alexandrian astronomer Ptolemy, who added details to account for the careful astronomical observations, where they saw the stars circle around the North Star, and how stars made their way from west or from east to west, same as the sun. And they didn't really change very much from year to year. At least men didn't live long enough to see different traces across the sky. And so on a clear night in medieval Europe, a person looking up into the cathedral sky would have seen huge transparent spheres nested inside each other, circling the center of the universe, which they believed was the Earth. Earth, of course, was the center of the universe. And an uneasy alliance with Christianity. You'll remember when Galileo put his bunched glass lenses together, he was able to see the moon in greater detail than ever before, or at least in those times. And he was able to see the mountains and craters and things on the moon. And when he attempted to show those to the clergy, why, that was just blasphemous. Everybody knew the moon was made of green cheese at that time. And things are not so unlike that now. As we try to understand the science of cosmology, we kind of run into the same roadblocks. We have in our physics community those that are deeply entrenched in the idea that the entire universe was packed into a tiny grain of sand that weighed about 20 pounds, and that at some moment there was some anomaly, some inflaton, they call it. We have protons and neutrons, now we have inflatons. Some inflaton field in a Higgs ocean had a ripple or a jiggle or a rubber band snapped and lit the fuse and fired off the Big Bang. And so in an amount of time which we call Planck time, which is the amount of time it takes for the speed of light to travel the Planck length, which time is about 10 to the negative 43rd seconds, the universe went from this 20-pound speck of sand into just about the volume that we see now, and of course immediately began to cool. And so now the universe is pretty much somewhere around 2.47 degrees Kelvin everywhere you look. But now, of course, if you go out a few decimal places, 4 or 5 decimal places, or even 6 decimal places, which we're pretty confident we can do, we find that radiation that approaches the Earth from all these different angles has slightly different temperatures. So what was once thought, and I mean once, like just a couple of years ago, what was once thought that there was a temperature homogeny throughout the universe, indicating that, confounding the idea that we exploded into existence, because an explosion would have yielded maybe not such a homogeneous expansion. You know, when there's an explosion, you have all kinds of turbulence, and you have maybe not perfectly geometrically spherical expansion. And so temperature equilibrium throughout the universe and low microwave energy about the same level all across the universe kind of confounded the idea of Big Bang. But now we've seen this slight difference in the 4th or 5th decimal place of the temperature of the universe, and so it kind of supports the Big Bang theory. And what we try to do as physicists is, of course, experimentally prove these things, which is pretty hard to do since we can't collapse an entire universe of matter into the grain of sand weighing 20 pounds and blow it up. So all we have are mathematical models of how this could happen. Now, one of the things that we'd like to discuss here is that there are different phases of this matter. I'm going to bring into view something called string theory, which we talked about before on this program, and you can read several really good books on it out there. Excuse me. And so what you have now is you have matter coexisting in space, but when we split it and split it and split it down smaller and smaller, we get to atoms, and then we get to protons and neutrons, and then we can blow those apart into quarks, and we blow quarks apart, and what do we end up with? We end up with a single species of string. Now, supposedly, mathematically, when we vibrate the string very, very fast, we get high energy, and that equates to heavy mass. And when we vibrate the string very softly, very quietly, low energy, we get light mass. And if we vibrate it just right, we get what's called a graviton. And a graviton is, I guess, the lowest measurement of gravity that there is. And gravity is what you need, even on a quantum level, to start gathering all that matter and energy unorganized into planets and stars. But where it goes from there is a little bit like explaining man with the theory of evolution. Gathering quarks together to make protons, protons together to make atoms or molecules or aggregates of molecules or small grains of sand or small rocks or small asteroids or stars that self-ignite, and then planets that neatly and perfectly orbit themselves around those stars, that's a little bit of a jump. Is it possible? Sure. Sure, it's possible. It's about as possible as rolling an egg off of a table, watching it splatter on the floor, and then sitting back and watching it reorganize itself back into an egg and fly back up on the table. That's about where the odds are. And so when we talk about the creation of the Earth from a cosmological point of view, there is a gulf between string theory vibrating at different frequencies, assuming different quarks, forming different subatomic particles, and then atoms, and then molecules, and jumping all the way to the what seems to be perfect ecosystem of the Earth. That's quite a jump. What we like to interject at this point is what we like to call, what the industry likes to call, intelligent design. I can't tell you how many times in the last week in lectures or at book signings people have asked me, gee, Dr. Agnew, what is intelligent design? And I kind of liken it to, in a universe of chaos, there is a probability that chaos will order itself and go from a high entropy state, that is to say, total disorganization and total decay, into one of near-perfect poetic order. But that probability is so small, it actually has been calculated, although roughly, and we're somewhere about 10 to the minus 221 as far as probability of even forming a carbon-based universe, let alone a carbon-based universe that's as organized as this one. So there is some odd that it could occur. But when you consider that we are not alone in the universe, and I think that there are very few of our listeners out there that would believe that we're the only sentient beings in the universe, and wherever there are two beings, one will always be more intelligent than the other. And wherever there are two civilizations, one will always be more advanced than the other. And if there are two civilizations, maybe there are 2 billion civilizations. And so somewhere along that strata, there is a civilization that's more intelligent than all of them, but certainly almost an infinite degree of intelligence between them. And so, whereas we think we're very advanced with our internet and our automobiles and our airplanes and our submarines and our jet skis and our digital telescopes. At about 1 million years, at the rate that we are expanding technology, which, according to the experts in the field, our level of technology is doubling about every 5 years now, and that will continue to accelerate as the proliferation of knowledge goes unhindered, as it always has in ancient civilizations, where knowledge was hoarded by government or hoarded by the wealthy. Then society moved very slowly. It progressed very slowly. But where knowledge proliferated unchecked, society began to grow by leaps and bounds. And, unfortunately, chaos and war also progressed with it, as mightier and mightier tyrants tried to gain control of such an uncontrollable beast as progress. So this kind of leaves us with a paradox when we talk about the creation of the earth. And I think I would like to have some listeners help me with that. Maybe ask some questions about it or provide some insights about it. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. If you want to talk about the harmonic concordance of the grand sextile formation, or if you want to talk about cosmology, or if you'd like to express your opinion about cosmology, we have finally got the ability to take phone calls. So I'm going to give out the telephone number, and right after this commercial, we will take some phone calls. The number is toll-free. I think you can call anywhere in the United States. The number is 888-268-4313, and I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Well, the Ark of Millions of Years offers new light and discovery on the creation of the Earth. It is the Intelligent Design Handbook. Forward Magazine calls it the most comprehensive book ever written on the creation of the Earth. It will fundamentally change beliefs. There is more solid evidence and scholarly meat between its covers than any book in print to date. But its writing style is easy. It's even double-spaced, quite artistic, and easy to read. You do not have to have a physics degree to read it. My publisher says that every math formula you put into a book will cut your sales in half. And so, there are no math formulas in the book. We talk about mathematics, but we use it in a conceptual way. And, of course, it's available at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that A-R-K like Noah's Ark. Or you can pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble or Joseph Beth Booksellers. And now available at Davis Kidd Booksellers in Nashville, Jackson, and Memphis, Tennessee. And remember, if you order from the website, a couple of things. If you put in the code word ARK, you will get free shipping. And if you buy during the radio program, we will send you the entire book, audio CD, for free. You can also download a couple of chapters for nothing, put it on your iPod, or burn a CD and play it in your vehicle. You can share it with friends, and when you're done with it, you can give it away if you like. Help other people find out about the Ark of Millions of Years. All right, again, that phone number, 888-268-4313. This is X Squared Radio, and I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're talking about cosmology and the creation of the Earth. Now, one of the things about the Earth that is unique in our solar system is that we have a magnetosphere, an ionosphere, that work together to shield the Earth from cosmic radiation from the sun. Now, this is something that another planet we are currently exploring, Mars, does not have. It's true. Mars does not have a magnetosphere. It's evident from this that Mars does not have a solid core that is rotating at a different speed than its crust, as the Earth has. The Earth is like a little generator, a little motor floating around the Sun, and the fact that our core rotates at a different speed than the crust creates a handy magnetic field around the Earth, and that allows the cosmic radiation that comes from the Sun to route right around the Earth. And we do give off some charged oxygen molecules, and we charge up the ionosphere from time to time and generate a real pretty aurora borealis. But
hello?
Hello.
Hi. I just tuned in.
Yes.
I understand you're talking some astrology, and I was wondering if you had a chance to look into the possible meaning of UB313, what kind of energy that brings into our sphere of influence.
Yeah, the energies that's brought in by clusters that are out there, from a gravitational point of view, is quite weak. The sun, the light that we see, some of it can be as much as 100,000 light years old. So actually, we're looking at...
I'm talking about the discovery of the so-called new planet.
Yeah. The planet X or the 10th
planet. You know,
even
though it's physically very distant, it's my belief that nonetheless it's in the reactive near field of the sun. So it still plays a major role in our activities.
So you think that the planet has been hiding behind the sun all these centuries and not
Not at all. It's just a very odd orbit. You know, it's almost orthogonal to the ecliptic.
So
my preliminary investigation, you know, if I can interject.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I looked into where it was discovered and some mythology and things like that. And some keywords I came up with. One was watcher at the threshold. And I was curious if anyone came up with something similar.
I haven't seen those keywords.
It was at the place where the fishes are connected also, which was kind of interesting.
I have seen it associated with Marduk and also with...
Right, because of Cetus.
Right. Now, we don't really have enough information to know what the trajectory of this planet might be, or even if it does orbit
our sun. Oh, there's an ephemeris already. There is an ephemeris.
Well, I'm not an astronomer, but I do have friends that are astronomers, and they've speculated about this for quite some time.
Great. Did you pick anything up?
Well, I have a friend named John who's a radio astronomer outside of Knoxville. And even with his observations, we really do not have enough perspective time-wise to plot a trajectory. We don't know if it's going to interact with Earth in a gravitational way. And frankly, they don't see very much perturbation on our sun to even speculate that it actually revolves around our sun. They think it may even revolve, you know, just be a free-floating planet that comes through our solar system. They don't really have a track of...
If you go to the Swiss ephemeris, the folks that run, it's called astro.com. It's called, it's really, there's some German name or whatever. But if you go there and you go to their Swiss ephemeris, there's a complete trajectory, as you say. You can find out where it was, you know, 1,000 years ago or whatever.
Well, I know that those are out there.
The orbital elements have been determined, in other words. So it definitely is a member of the sun, anyway. Whether or not it was recently captured, you know, that's another matter. But it has developed a regular orbit.
Well, anciently, there are observations of close passes by a fairly large gravitational body.
Well, that's another matter, you know, the so-called planet X.
Well, I'm not even using Emanuel Velikovsky's observations, but there, you know, was a period of about 50 years between appearances of this planet, and evidently for
about 50 years.
About 50 years.
Uh huh.
And between appearances, all was peace and harmony, but when it came through, it dragged a lot of garbage with it, that some of it rained down through the atmosphere and destroyed some areas of the planet and dumped a bunch of methane into the atmosphere and dumped a bunch of carbon pellets across the Atlantic Ocean and coming down from the
and things, yeah.
Siberian areas.
Oh, yeah.
But I will do some more research on that. As I said, I'm not an astronomer. I'm a fledgling cosmologist myself, if I even consider myself that. I think the mathematics that you must master to be a true cosmologist is beyond most physicists. But as a theoretical physicist, I'm fascinated by astronomy. I just don't have the time to dedicate to it, the time to stand in front of a telescope and study things. But,
no, I understand. Where I was coming from was its influence on behavior, you know, human behavior, basically, and what we can anticipate. You know.
Well, I'm going to cover that more in depth in another show where we talk about the metaphysics of cumulative human behavior and how it affects not only the mood of civilization, but also the condition of the planet. And that's why I claim that everything we do eventually affects the universe, because it all starts with individuals and then families and then societies, and the way that we act or are acted upon does have a great effect on the harmony of our universe.
Oh, certainly. We're just little mobile entities of the planet. You know, as far as our planetary bodies go.
Right. Well, I spent a lot of time studying the news and the global mood during the Grand Sextile Alignment of November of 2003, at the time we finished our book and published it. And I really didn't see, even though there were a lot of websites out there watching it, lot of trained observers watching it, there just wasn't a big shift as we expected to see.
Oh, there was. There was. There was some incredible energy planted. You know, you kind of have to wait for its fruition. But you're speaking of the 72-degree separation of the inner planets. That
mm-hmm, the six planets.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the lunar eclipse in the center of it.
Yeah, most definitely.
Hasn't occurred since the heralding of the birth of Solomon.
Right. Right. The last time it did occur, actually, more recently than that. And I forgot the magical order that was inaugurated at that point. But, you're not going to see a flash in the sky saying, you know, it's here. But there's definitely some energy that was inaugurated,
Let me ask you a question. You seem to be in tune with the metaphysics of astrology. Do you feel as though society, or no, let me put it the other way. Do you feel that the race of mankind is on the threshold of a metamorphosis?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. In fact, it's going to get to the point where people's thoughts in a crowded situation will elicit unexpected behavior, if you get my drift. There's going to be a refinement in people's ability to interact at a psychic level, perhaps.
Well,
but they're not even
going to be aware. Can you expand a little bit on that? What do you mean by refinement? Do you mean that
our bodies, the planet is undergoing a refinement. I go back to the notion of us utilizing planetary bodies. What I'm trying to express is there'll be more of a psychic attunement. I think cell phones is a physical example of as basic as that is, or that we're undergoing psychologically. Psychologically.
I'm trying to drive at some kind of result here. You know, for 100 centuries, mankind has essentially been charging across the frozen tundra at one another, mm-hmm. battle axes in hand, tribal banners, you know, floating in the wind.
Yes.
And the metamorphosis that I kind of see, even though I'm not a great student of the metaphysics of it, is I see mankind beginning to realize that we are earthlings rather than Americans or Russians.
Exactly. And our psychic energy is the earth, and it's collective, and there's swarming behavior, and it's going to be more and more sensitive. And people that aren't aware of this metamorphosis will be taken by surprise and behave in what would ostensibly be an irrational manner.
Well, irrational good like a child, or irrational bad like a...
Like a child, because they're not aware of their own psychic development.
All right, well, I think that could be a good thing. Because the children don't charge across the frozen tundra.
Right. But then, you know, you're going to get the separation of those that are self-aware and those that just can't pull out of this dense material worldview.
All right. So now you're going to have a separation between those that are awake and those that are unaware of what's going on around them.
Absolutely.
All right. What do you think the result of this separation is going to be?
That's not looking good. And, you know, it's...
I guess it boils down to whether...
It's not. There's going to be those that are aware of the change and enjoy change, and those that aren't are going to suffer because they're not going to understand it. And... they're going to become depressed because they can't control it.
Well,
can't exert control over their environment come to us. What's that?
I was going to say, don't you think it's going to depend on whether the ones that are aware, the ones that are actually feeling this transcending growth, this
mm-hmm.
metamorphosis into a spiritual being, are in control of things like oil and money and energy?
They will be in control. That's the whole idea of inheriting the earth.
Well, I hope so.
Absolutely.
ones that are not aware are the ones that are hoarding the energy, then what's going to happen is they're going to starve us out the same way as every government has done. When the people yearn to be free, yearn to reach out to their off-world roots, they are suppressed, they are murdered, they are kept in ignorance, they are shut off from their source of information because now they are no longer controllable.
Right. See, but the governments, their fascist governments, got away with that years past because there were places for the oppressed to go and seek freedom. Now there isn't. So
mm-hmm.
revolution and revolt is the only solution, and it'll be a do or die situation.
So that's what you meant by it doesn't look good.
Right, exactly.
I see. And what is your name?
This is Barry in Tucson, Arizona.
All right. I love Tucson.
You got a cool show, one of the better ones. So thanks for chatting.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you very much for the call. You can call back anytime.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Barry from Tucson, and we appreciate that kind of free thinking. It gets my juices flowing. And it has a lot to do with the cosmology of the creation of the Earth, because many people think that the Earth would be much better off without humans on it. That if humans weren't here, the fish could swim and the birds could fly and the bears would eat the birds and the bees would pollinate the flowers and all would be peace and tranquility. But I'm here to tell you, as host of this show, I'm here to tell you that the Earth would be wasted without humans on it. That the intelligent designer of the Earth built it, set it in the heavens in this particular orbit, this particular distance away from a sun with just the right wavelength of energy, placed a moon around it so that it would eclipse that sun perfectly, so that we could enjoy the contrast of our excellent ecosystem in the cold space of the universe, and that we are probably not the only planet with sentient life. And I don't mean sentient life with six arms and fins or breathing methane. I mean other beings that look like us and whose DNA is so close to ours that we would be kin. I've told you before on the show that our health dollars are being spent now more than ever on the study of the human genome. And the amount of knowledge that we're gaining about the human genome has told us that 90% of the genetic capability of human beings did not nor could not have originated here. Our DNA has origins elsewhere, and it cannot be expressed on this planet. Does that mean if we go to another planet that generations hence it would be expressed? Possibly. But that's going to be very difficult to know, since our concept of space travel is that we build a little titanium and aluminum can, we jump in it, we light a fire under it, and we blast it out into space, and then we ride in it until we reach something interesting. But I'm here to tell you that there is a different way of traveling across space. Now, I don't have much time to cover this, but we're going to try and cover a little bit of it. In our UFO section tonight, I do want to talk about crop circles. I have personally walked around a crop circle made in a wheat field. And I got down on my hands and knees with my fingers right down in the dirt, just as close as I could get. And in my trained opinion, it did not look like a wheat field that had been driven through or stomped down with a board or snowshoes or anything else. The pattern in this wheat, and by the way, this wheat was still green. It was not golden. It was not ready to harvest. It was a little over waist high, and it was outside of the city of Bowling Green, Kentucky. And the patterns that were in the wheat, although from the ground, were just impossible to tell what it was. When I walked through this wheat field, the patterns were just unbelievable. It appeared as though at the very base of the wheat plant itself that the wheat just simply grew at a right angle. There was no break in the stalk. There was no in the tubular formation of the wheat. And yet this was quite a bit different than other wheat anomalies like I have seen pictures of on the Internet or read about in Earth Files, Linda Moulton Howe's excellent science magazine. Those wheat fields in England, although those patterns are absolutely fascinating and the wheat is golden and beautiful, this was nothing like that. I couldn't explain it. I even dug up some of the wheat plants and took them home and looked at them under a big magnifying glass, and I'm telling you that there's just no way that wheat could have broken over that way. Now, other than that, I really don't know what to make of crop circles. I think the patterns are absolutely fascinating. I have looked up a couple of websites where they've tried to catalog them, but as yet, I haven't seen anybody decode them or make them into a language or figure out what they're trying to say. I did research into the Arecibo answer. Many of our listeners may not know what that is. Arecibo is a giant radio dish in South America. And Carl Sagan put together a digital broadcast from that dish that told people the basic five most common elements on our planet, DNA, the style of antenna that was used to transmit the message, the height of a human being, and our position in the solar system. And it was sent in binary code. Well, the Arecibo answer appeared in or around Wiltshire, England, and it appeared to be an answer to that that broadcast. However, even though it was quite creative, telling us that they were one element different, I think silicon was the most common element, and it was not carbon-based. The beings were 3 feet tall, little large head, and a different kind of antenna sent back in a different population and a different placement in a solar system. Although that was very clever, the answer was returned to us in the same upside-down manner as the original broadcast was published in a magazine. It was not the way it was broadcast, but it was the way it was published in a magazine, and so there was the folly of it. I very much want to believe that crop circles are off-worldly, that they are generated by very clever and interesting off-world activities, and they're trying to communicate something to us. I want to believe that. If there's anyone out there that has any proof or has a crop circle that they want to talk about or their investigation of a crop circle, I would be very interested in hearing about it. Until then, I think they make great calendars. I like to, of course, try to decipher them myself. I don't see as how they would be any organized way of communicating with us, however, because if they're smart enough to sneak in and lay a crop circle down, they would be smart enough to communicate with us straight on. So if you have any information about crop circles in any kind of plant, I know they ostensibly appear everywhere in wheat fields in England, although that's where most of them occur. They also occur in Ireland and Scotland and some places in the U.S. and South America. If you have information on that, you can certainly send it to me at xsquaredradio.com. Just simply email me there, or you can call in tonight. Or if you happen to have information on that, you can provide it to us at another show. Just call in any time. Now, one of the things that a recurring theme that we seem to see in these crop circles is a repeating pattern, whether it's circles within circles or different angles repeating around and around. And what that seems to carry with it is the theme of Ouroboros. A lot of people don't know what the cosmic Ouroboros is. Anciently, the union of the polarity, very well discussed in our book in the chapter called The Union of the Polarity, is the concept that we have a spirit earth or a higher energy earth, a higher earth, and a lower earth or a temporal earth living or existing together as a binary planet. And that this union is absolutely essential to understanding the life force of this planet. And that this planet, tilted at 23 degrees, has an imaginary line drawn through it going from the North Pole to the South Pole. And that if you were to draw a line through this, it would point out into space. And as the Earth wobbles on its axis, the line going through the North Pole and South Pole draws a circle through the zodiac. This circle, 360 degrees of it, is called the precession. What that means is, though, although the Earth rotates in one direction, the line drawn in the heavens through the zodiac goes in the opposite direction. So it's called the precession. Now, interestingly enough, there are 12 signs in the zodiac, and they're equidistant. 2,166 years between signs. And we are just now approaching the end of the precession. We have almost completed a 26,000-year cycle of the wobble of the Earth. Of course, what this means is as that wobble changes, what we now see is the North Star, or the polar star around which all the stars rotate, it would change to other stars. Gradually, of course. But now we are coming up on the dawning of, you guessed it, the age of Aquarius, which, if you look at the Aztec calendar, you'll notice the Solkin wheels, smaller wheel on the inside, a larger wheel on the outside, lined up, and somewhere around 529 on the clock, if you look at the Aztec calendar, you will see the age of Aquarius beginning. Well, the Ouroboros is a depiction of a giant dragon or a giant serpent swallowing his own tail. And this dragon, this serpent, is extremely common in all kinds of civilizations. Quetzalcoatl post-classic area of the Yucatan. Ouroboros is all through many of the religions of Europe and of Mesopotamia and Assyrian art. You will see Ouroboros everywhere. So the cosmic Ouroboros represents the universe as a continuity of vastly different size scales, of which the largest and smallest may be linked by gravity. And there are 60 orders of magnitude to separate the very smallest from the very largest, traveling around the serpent from head to tail. And this is also the pattern that we see in these crop circles. We see circles within circles, triangles within triangles, but this same pattern of planetary eternity. Now, a lot of people, including ourselves, think that December 21st, 2012, which is actually the precise ending of the precession, as predicted by the Tolkien calendar, is going to be a date at which something mighty is going to happen. We'd like to think that and maybe the two Earths are going to separate again, or maybe there'll be a mighty cataclysm. Some people have speculated that there'll be a tremendous gravitational pulse that comes out of the center of our galaxy every 26,000 years and causes great cataclysms. Frankly, if a gravitational pulse came out of the center of the galaxy, it wouldn't be weak enough to ripple a cup of tea here on Earth. It would have to be substantially closer than that to have any kind of effect on us. However, if a gravitational pulse was of sufficient amplitude, it could yank the oceans up in the sky about 2,000 feet, and when the gravitational pulse settled back, you would have a tsunami of unbelievable proportions. And seeing as how 90% of the population of just about every country lives within 20 miles of a coast, I think that would change a lot of real estate prices, to say the least. So I want to get more information on crop circles, and I don't want to hear the popular ones. I want to hear what people are feeling. I want to hear what people are thinking. I want to know if you think crop circles are graffiti left in the innocent crops of the world to try to alert mankind that someone out there is trying to talk to us. Although I think it would be infinitely easier for them just to waltz into the Cache Valley Channel in the middle of Logan, Utah, and tell us who they are and what their intentions are. It would be just that easy to communicate with us. I think anybody within a light year of Earth would know that we are a very vibrant, very musical, and, of course, creative, and even violent people. I'm hoping that, kind of like Barry in Tucson, that everybody realizes we are on the dawn, the age of Aquarius, and that we are nearing the point of metamorphosis as a race. I'm going to talk a lot about this in the next show. We are going to cover the metamorphosis of the race of mankind. And we'll try to maybe talk about this on several subsequent shows, because it's a very, very large subject. And it's one that conservatives and liberals alike would take affront to, and certainly those that would conquer the world and subjugate it would not like to hear it. However, I think that there are literally hundreds of millions of people on the earth that feel the same way I do. Why do I know that? Well, not because they call in this show or write me letters, but I know this is going to sound strange for a physicist, but I can feel it. I just feel like people are nearing the point where we are ready to accept that we are Earthlings, and that this is our planet, this is our home, and that the universe is laying before us, ready to discover, and that somehow, very soon, we have to realize that there's enough energy for everyone. There's enough food, enough land, enough water for everyone. And there really is no cause anymore for anyone to starve to death. And there's no cause anymore for armies to march into another country and conquer it. There is a way for us to transcend this. I'm not saying that we should take everything away from the wealthy and give it to the poor, not at all. But I am saying that the opportunity to rise up out of poverty, to teach oneself how to sustain life and how precious life is laying before our feet, and that we are less than a generation away from curing most major diseases, including viruses, and that we are fully capable of becoming the spiritual being we were meant to be, even though we are currently having a mortal experience. I also want to leave with you one last time the offer to purchase our book, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1. If you visit our website at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com, please register for the newsletter. The process is very simple. You don't have to give up any information, and we'll send you all kinds of discounts and bonus material available from time to time. We have wonderful affiliates. Don't forget to go to ancienttreasures.com or kingtutshop.com. Great pieces of art that you can stick in your library. Yeah, they're replicas, but they start off good conversations, and people will know where your head is. And don't forget that the Ark of Millions of Years is the greatest story on the universe. We want you to read it. We want you to listen to it this year. Because in January, Volume 2 comes out. And then everything is going to change. Because that book, that volume, is all about the end times. And let me tell you, there's such detail in this, it's going to change everything. And the next 8 years going to bring about a lot more changes to our world than you can imagine. You need this information now more than ever. Don't miss a single one of our programs, and please read the book this year. It's available anytime at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com, or you can go to Barnes & Noble or Joseph Beth Booksellers or Davis Kidd Booksellers. And I do want to acknowledge my great friends at the Book Table in Logan, Utah, down there on Highway 29 South. So don't forget to stop in there and say hello to those people. They were absolutely first rate to us over the weekend. I'm Brooks Agnew. This is X Squared Radio. You take care of yourselves, Earth Explorers, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Central, right here on X Squared Radio. Thank you and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blog and service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.